Welcome to The Geek in Review, the podcast focused on innovative and creative ideas in the legal profession. I'm Marlene Gebauer.
And I'm Greg Lambert. Well, this is take two because we had a party break out as we were recording the first go-around.
It was a flash mob.
And we're still here at Legal Week 2024. And we're
getting it started.
We are. Get it started in here. I won't sing that. But we have a returning guest, Molly Nichols from Redgrave,
and she brought a guest
with us today, Mark Knoll, also from Redgrave. So Molly and Mark, thank you very much for waiting. And Mark, I just found out that you're a former cop.
Yeah.
It showed when you went out there and started getting onto the DJ.
Well, it wasn't the DJ's fault, but we did have a chat with the ALM staff about putting, a DJ right next to the press room.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Made it a little difficult to start this.
It's true.
It's all good.
We'll look back at this and laugh. Yeah. So it'll be a good story.
So, Molly, we had you on about a year ago, and we'll talk about, a little over a year ago. We'll talk about that, but we're here in New York at Legal Week. What brings you and Redgrave to Legal Week? What are you expecting to see, and what do people expect from you while you're here?
Well, we just finished our second year. So we launched.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, we launched in January of 2022. And so we finished our second year in existence. And so we are continuing to get our message out about who we are and what we do. And it's important that we're a part of the conversation and that we understand what technology is being talked about so that we can actually perhaps bring a little different message. A lot of what you see at Legal Week is you see the shiny objects and you hear a lot of hype. And we have a bunch of scientists on our staff and technologists who really focus on custom solutions about what our clients actually need and what will work within their particular environment and their systems and their process. And right now the big buzz is on generative AI and how can they implement generative AI into their workflow, into their day-to-day, into their legal matters.
If they even want to.
If they need to.
Right.
And so we're having those honest discussions with clients, potential clients, because a lot of things are coming up that are hype. And so it's like getting through that message that there's a lot to really look at, consider, questions to ask.
And it's an education opportunity.
It is an education opportunity. And so what we've done here at Legal Week, we actually have a room here in the Hilton on Concourse G, where we're having education sessions, and earlier today and tomorrow we're going to have one on Gen AI use in TAR workflows. And so it's understanding how you can implement them, what are the pitfalls, and how much does that actually cost, and is there a cost savings? And I think we're hearing that there's probably not, at least at this point in time.
A lot of folks haven't done the math on some of these things.
And the timing, it's a process, and it takes a good amount of time. So anyway, so we are going through that education piece, and that's why we're here.
Yeah. Well, let me just kind of back off, and Mark, or give us kind of a 30,000-foot level of why clients hire Redgrave.
So for background, we added two more scientists to our applied science.
Okay.
So we had Dave Lewis, who was formerly the head scientist at Brainspace, and we added Jeremy Pickens, who was formerly at OpenText and Catalyst, and then Lenora Gray, who was one of the AI award innovator winners at Relativity's dinner last night.
Nice.
So we've got a lot of what we've been doing is gearing up to be able to both build and advise on these sorts of new technologies. That's also included doing some research, you know, including for a vendor that I think I mentioned earlier, who hired us to help do the experimental design for their Gen AI review and classification offering. So we've had a lot of stuff going on like that, you know, in the past year, in addition to clients who come to us because we will tackle problems or solve problems that nobody else does, including we write code in anger in the middle of a case.
Right. I like that, Mark. I haven't heard it. We normally talk about it as, you know, in the heat of battle or on the fly, you know, building software.
Yeah, I was thinking, is anger a new programming language?
Could be. All caps.
Yeah, it's like Rust.
If it's not, I'm inventing.
I like that.
No, but seriously, you know, one of the things that our some of our early large clients learned is they could throw random problems at us that no one else was addressing, and often we would be able to solve it overnight.
Yeah.
And that's one of our niches, is we tell people, bring us the most complicated, ugly case that you have, because the reason that we staffed up with data scientists and programmers who also overlap as being former attorneys and so forth, is that we've got a team that can handle a lot of problems that other folks just aren't geared for.
Right.
So that's our sweet spot.
Yeah, that seems to be a theme, that sort of that quick turnaround, that kind of concierge, white glove type of service is really what clients are looking for.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned something about a company reaching out and hiring you to do some testing with the generative AI. So, and this is just a question that popped off the top of my head, so take it for that. Is there an expectation of things that generative AI can do that people think it can do, and then when you actually go to test it out, it doesn't quite work that way? And then are there things that it does do well that people may not even think about? And you don't have to give away the secret sauce.
No. but these are the kinds of questions that clients come to us with, you know. And one of the back to your earlier question, what do we look to get out of legal week here? One of the things that we do is we've been walking around the floor looking at all of the vendors' offerings and claims, and our applied science team has been asking them questions about how they've tested it, you know, and how they've evaluated this stuff.
Telling you? All right.
Yep.
We'll beep that part out.
Well, I mean, we will also, dovrije no provjerije, trust but verify. We'll check it out ourselves. But one of the things that we want to understand is what claims are being thrown at our clients, you know, and then how do we advise them on what questions they should be asking or what evaluations they should be performing before they adopt any of these things. And yes, there are, I think we may have talked about some of the Gen AI pitfalls last year, but remember, they're large language models. They're not large legal reasoning models. They're not large factual models. They don't do multi-step reasoning, but because their job is to generate plausible looking language, and because it looks plausible, we tend to think that, or we tend to assume that there is a consciousness like ours behind that trying to communicate to us, but that's not how it's working at all. And so that's one of the reasons that that the hallucinations are a problem in all of the transformer models. And sometimes if you need something to be factually correct, it's going to take more effort to fix the bad draft than it would be for an expert to start from scratch.
Yeah, so I'm, you know, following on the sort of education idea. Last time you were here, you know, we talked about Gen AI and, you know, how it was going to hit the industry. And, you know, you were kind of afraid that people wouldn't, you know, judges, lawyers wouldn't accept it when it came to, you know, these large language models. Now, clearly they are embracing that. But I'm wondering, you know, where do you think they are in their understanding of it? Like, I think, again, we've seen on personal and professional levels how Gen AI works, and I think that's sort of where the buy-in comes in. But how much do they really understand at this point?
I don't know that there's a very good understanding whatsoever. We see reactions on... we see overreactions to it negatively by judges entering orders saying that you can't use artificial intelligence, or you have to notify the court when you are opposing counsel when you are using artificial intelligence, and you just have to breathe deep when you see something like that. And it's like, what do they mean by artificial intelligence? You know, and well, and it could mean almost anything that we use today has artificial intelligence.
Right, we've been using artificial intelligence for years.
Exactly.
Now we have Gen AI. So.
Yes. And so we received some outside counsel guidelines recently that said no artificial intelligence. And it's like, wait, that's what we're in the business of doing. So, you know, it's... those are the types of things where you see the overreaction to the use of generative AI and the negative reaction to it. And then on the positive reaction, it's like, oh, this could do my job, yeah. And let me have it draft everything. And then the problems that result from that when you're seeing briefs filed with cases that don't exist and things like that. So, you know, we have to look at that balance and have that education piece so that lawyers understand how they can fit it into their practice, because it will be a valuable piece of their practice. But it's really drilling into understanding how it fits in, doing the appropriate testing, and then doing the validation of what they're doing in order to understand how it will work. I know we're doing a lot of testing, putting Gen AI in a TAR workflow. And if you just change your workflow to all Gen AI, you're going to have some huge problems with that. But if you use your standard workflow and start picking certain pieces of that and use Gen AI, then it's reasonable so that you can make tweaks to that process without having this disaster and be that party that gets written up in, you know, the next edition of, you know.
Well, the result may not even be a disaster except for your checkbook, right? Because if you, we were talking about this earlier today, if you had a document corpus of 500,000 documents, if you wanted to use a generative AI engine and have it classify those documents, say you're going to be charged by the token, which is like 3/4 of a word, figure on... You'll pay 10 cents per doc in API charges to do one pass, to do one ranking or classification. So that's $50,000 for your 500,000 documents, not including what you're going to pay the lawyers to come up with the prompts and do QC and anything else like that. With a standard TAR process, you'd be looking at $10,000 or $12,000 of attorney time for the review, and the older TAR engines will rank in 5 minutes. The Gen AI will classify about 20 docs per minute. So it will take 2.5 weeks to get through your 500,000 doc corpus. So there are a lot of times just using the stuff blindly does not make sense from a time perspective, from a cost perspective. But as Molly said, there are ways that we can use it more cleverly to say find a initial training documents for a more traditional TAR engine that will then classify the bulk of your documents a lot more quickly, but without as much human review up front for the training.
So the discussion's kind of an opportunity to refocus clients on other technology that will actually solve the problem.
Correct. Correct. And then when you talk about, you know, the cost in particular, you look at tools in their toolkit that they already have, where it won't cost them anything, where if they're using, you know, Gen AI, it's going to cost quite a bit of money. Yeah. So,
And we've talked about this before, in that there's kind of this layering of existing technology, AI, generative AI, extractive. And so are you kind of coaching your clients on, okay, let's look at the whole spectrum of tools that we have, and it's not just one tool to do all problems, but it's this blending of tools. And are you finding them receptive to that? Are you, what's kind of the feedback you're getting from clients?
Yes, we're finding they want to use the tools they have. And so they like the message that we're not trying to sell them a shiny object, something new to bring in to be that silver bullet, but to find whatever this AI that they want to bring in, to see what would fit within what they have, to fill that gap, to help with whatever automation that they want to have, and make sure that it integrates with the rest of their technology stack.
Yeah, and a lot of times the best solution is not going to involve generative AI. All right, we're going to be running automation, we're going to be writing some glue code to help tie some of their existing systems together, come up with some better workflows, things like that. You know, there are going to be things that generative AI is good at, and that we're going to find uses like in TAR and for summarization in investigations and so forth. But for writing legal documents and other things like that, it tends to not be cost effective still.
Does generative AI, because I know one of the early use cases that I remember hearing, gosh, this is probably back in March, when it came to e-discovery, and we had a guest on earlier that talked about this, in that one of the issues that over the past few years is that people have become a little bit more savvy on not just saying everything and writing everything down and sending it out or saying everything, but being very creative in when it's time to take the conversation offline. And so one of the early use cases that I heard was that people thought that generative AI would help kind of identify when there are changes in the conversation, in the flow of the information going back and forth. Are you seeing any of that?
Well, that is a testable question. Right. And one of the things that we like to do with testable questions is obviously test them. But what you're describing also is what we have been built into what you sometimes heard as diversity algorithms, which are looking for novelty or outlier or anomaly detection in the language. And a lot of as with TAR for classification, using some of these algorithms for anomaly detection may be as good or better or almost as good, but 20 times cheaper than generative AI. This is one of the areas that there's a lot of also academic research going on that we're following. But again, we run into the same issue there as we do with TAR and classification, is that sometimes the 20-year-old techniques are way faster, way less expensive, and good enough.
I'm wondering, other changes in the industry that you've needed to respond to other than generative AI. Is there anything else besides that?
It's like, where do we start?
Top three?
It's like, how long do you have? Yeah.
Well, one of the things that we're finding that clients want to know, they want to get insight into efficiencies, and they want to know how to measure things, and that's speaking our language. It's a lot of analytics, but it's understanding what data needs to be collected in order to measure it, and then how is that, how do you analyze that once you've collected it and measured it, And so we build data visualizations to help our clients. And so we help them identify what needs to be measured and then help them with a mechanism to be able to have that visualization so that it can help them with decision making. And many times that's in the discovery space. But it can be in legal operations and other areas as well. So, you know, we have one client who has us doing this with five different e-discovery providers that they have, and they want to be able to compare them to understand, you know, to be able to look at apples to apples and to look at the efficiencies in each one of their discovery vendors. And so that's, you know, something that we're assisting them with. And it's important because, as we all know, every service provider presents their stuff in a different way, their services, the way they host data, the way they package things, and the way they price it. And so,
it's not always easy to just kind of just overlay and compare. So.
That's correct. And, and it's not just the pricing that we look at when we're helping our clients. We have a list of, 75 different KPIs that we have that, you know, we help our clients look at and measure. So. Do you have something else, Mark?
Well, I mean, one of the tricks there, as Molly was alluding to, is you have to figure out what metrics or what data will actually answer the question. You know, and that's one of the areas where I think a lot of our both experienced practitioners and our applied science team come in, because there are a lot of ways that you could measure, you know, these results that would not necessarily be valid or give you good results. So
we're also finding that the volume of data, continues to grow, and some of the review tools that are existing today are just too expensive to use. We were approached by a trucking client that had 2 billion short messages from a homegrown system with a...
Actually, two homegrown systems.
Two homegrown systems.
That's not enough.
And it also had geolocation data. So it was communications from the trucker back to the dispatch. And so all of that had to be put into a...
Well, it needed to be full text searchable, but we also needed to be able to tie it together with stuff in similar geographic locations and also similar times. The other fun part is that this data was so large that the producing party could only host 3 months' worth in their own systems that generated it. But we were our client had 12 years worth produced that all needed to be indexed and available for search in the same corpus.
Hmm. What were they backing this up on? Was it cloud or was it physical drive somewhere?
Well, that's another story, because it was because the productions were all over the place, and we had to identify several that were corrupted or several that came from wrong sources or had an unusual deficit. Like 1/3 the expected number of message traffic, you know, for several months compared to the rest of the years, and then provide, you know, affidavits, you know, for going for a motion to compel. So,
yeah, and so we ended up building. Why don't you talk about the build, Mark? You're the one who did it. So if I start, you'll look at me and go, that's not quite right.
Well, Benton.
Benton built
most of this. So as Molly was saying earlier, a lot of traditional e-discovery platforms would be cost prohibitive to put that stuff in. We used AWS Cloud Search and a few custom scripts and search interface so that we could load all of that data, but then spin it down when the client didn't need to search it. And once it's spun down, it only costs, you know, $160, $170 a month to keep it ready. And then they say, hey, we need to start searching again for depositions or motion practice, we can spin it up in a day or two, and then they use it for as long as they need to, and then it goes back down. So it's a lot more cost effective than using a traditional e-discovery tool, where if you had that many terabytes of data being hosted,
Well, that's very creative. I like how you did that. So,
so Molly, you've been here before, so you know about the crystal ball question. But the crystal ball question is that we were going to ask both of you is, you know, what do you see as the biggest challenge, you know, in the next, you know, 2 to 4 years that the legal industry is facing, and, you know, in your space or in general?
Yes.
Yeah, he's a newbie. He has to go first.
Okay, fair enough. Well, in that case, I may offer you more than one.
All right.
I think it's Gartner that has the hype curve.
Yep. You know,
the
hype cycle.
You
know,
So there's first that peak of unrealistic expectations and then the trough of disillusionment. And I think we're about to hit the trough in 2024 because people, as they start to deploy these things, will realize that the Gen AI isn't the magic bullet, or it wasn't the right technology choice for that particular task, or it's too expensive. As we said, there are a lot of things that it would be suitable for, but you have to be a lot more careful with the choosing and evaluation. And so I think we're going to hit that trough in 2024, and there's going to be a bit of a correction. But the other challenge that I see is also something that Molly mentioned earlier, and that is you see clients, but not just clients, but also courts and government agencies and regulators overreacting, you know, and saying no AI for anything, but they don't even define what AI means or whether they're restricting it to generative AI or even or including 30-year-old machine learning techniques that we're using for everything else. And so dealing with those hurdles, not just from clients, but regulatory and legal hurdles, I think is going to be another area where we're going to have a lot of work to do.
All right. So he went first, so you get to go next.
So I'm going to be a little more optimistic.
All right.
So I think we've learned a lot in the past decade plus with regard to TAR. We resisted it. We did everything we could to say it was a black box. We had courts push it away. I think with generative AI, we're actually going to look at it and say, how can this help us? And what part of our process can this actually make a difference for our clients? And we're going to look at it. We're going to educate ourselves. We're going to test it. And we're not going to just wholesale adopt it and throw it in, but we're going to try different things. And then we're going to enhance our process. And I think it's going to be this iterative change because we have such a thoughtful industry now. And before, it was just the wild, wild west. And there's still some of that, don't get me wrong. But we have enough very smart people who have been in this industry long enough to know, don't just throw it at it. Let's, you know, go through a process and let's start testing it and do this the right way.
Excellent. Well, Molly Nichols and Mark Knoll, thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us here at Legal Week. And Mark, thanks for going out and clearing out the DJ for us.
Great. Thank you both for having us.
Indeed. It's our pleasure. Thanks.
And of course, thanks to all of you, our listeners, for taking the time to listen to the Geek & Review podcast. If you enjoy the show, share it with a colleague. We'd love to hear from you, so reach out to us on social media. I can be found on LinkedIn or on X at GayBauerM and on Threads at MGayBauer66.
And I can be reached on LinkedIn or I'm at Glambert on X or GlambertPod on Threads. Molly, if someone wants to learn more about Redgrave, where do they need to go?
Sure. On our website at redgravedata.com.
All right. Thank you very much.
Great.
And as always... The music you hear is from Jerry David DeSica. Thank you, Jerry.
Yep. You also hear it from the Legal Talk Network over there.
They're a rowdy group.